Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bitchery of History. My name is Max.
I'm Allison.
And today, I'm going to be talking about the warrior queen, Amina of Zarya.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
I am so ready. I know absolutely nothing.
And who are you doing? Because I know nothing about your lady either.
I am doing Maleva Marich.
Fantastic.
Have you ever heard of her? Has anyone ever heard of her? Oh, no. Venus has. No. Okay, great.
Can I?
Bonus points.
I thought real quick before we got started that we should point a couple of things out.
Okay.
First thing is, this is the last episode of season 4.
Woo!
Which is crazy.
Season finale.
At the end of this episode, we will have covered 219 women.
Woo-hoo!
Since the beginning of the Bitchery of History. And the last thing I thought we should point out is that season 4 started with Bitches Get Personal last year, and now we're ending with Bitches Get Personal this year. So that's very exciting, and also I thought we would just give another round of applause for the amazing cast of Bitches Get Personal. All right, that's all I wanted to say.
You can go ahead. Great. Yeah. Great. I feel like I should throw in like all episodes now streaming of season 4.
They are.
Of all seasons.
iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Google Play.
So, little backstory that's like personal backstory, especially because now it's Bitches Get Personal or the personal, my personal bitchery, whatever.
The bitchery
whatever
of personal.
The bitchery of personal, thank you. Okay, so initially, you know, when we started the podcast, part of the idea had come from this conversation that I was having with my old roommate where she told me she didn't know who Marie Curie was. And I kind of died inside because I was like, but why don't you? But why? Because why? And because I had grown up sort of always knowing about her. And I was like, there's all these amazing women that have done many incredible things and contributed so much to society and math and arts and culture and all these things. And like, people don't know about them. And that was part of the inspiration when we started this podcast. So when I was looking up who I wanted to cover for the live episodes, I knew I wanted to do Lynn Cox. Listen to the other episode.
That one
is
incredible.
And I knew I wanted to cover her. But the other one, I just started Googling like amazing women from history that you've never heard of, or like something very generic. And I came upon this woman and I was like, okay, I'll do her. And then I didn't look up anything about her. I knew very like what you can read on biography.com or whatever.
Right.
And I was very nervous that her story wasn't going to be that exciting or that there wasn't going to be a lot of information. And I was like, oh, I feel like I might have to change my woman.
And it's not as if normally when we find women that don't have as a lot of backstory, we can just change them, even like a couple days before. But for this, we had commissioned artwork for our ladies. So it's not like we could just change midstream.
I really hope like this is going to work out. And then I started looking her up and she's like the epitome of why we started this podcast and why we need this podcast and why we have to start talking about women who have contributed things that have literally had their stories taken away from them by men. So with that preview, here we go. Okay, so Maleva was born in 1875 in Serbia. Her parents were wealthy and they were very respected members of the community, so she had a pretty good life growing up. There were some neighbors and like a family neighbor. The mom said to Maleva's mom, like, watch out for her. She's gonna be smart. And this was a pretty good call. In 1892, her father obtained the authorization from the Minister of Education to allow her to attend physics lectures that were only open to boys.
Fantastic.
So yes, shout out to the dads.
Shout out to the dads.
And in 1890, we've had some amazing dads on the podcast.
The number of dads who made our women's story possible is just astounding.
It's pretty tight. So in 1896, Maleva was admitted to the physics mathematics section of the Polytechnic Institute in Zurich with just four other students, all male, of course, Marcel Grossman, Louis Kohlraus, Jacob Ehrhart, and Albert Einstein. Casual.
Oh, I just got tingled.
So Albert and Maleva became inseparable. They would spend countless hours studying together. Albert didn't really like to attend lectures, but Maleva did, and she kind of helped keep him on track with everything. Can you see where
this
story is going?
Like, this is Mm-hmm. Behind every powerful man.
Right. So yeah. Mileva does leave for a little while and goes to study at a different university in Heidelberg. And Einstein writes her a letter, but then tells her in this letter, only write back to me when you get bored. And she waits months to write him back. Says in the letter, like, well, you said not to write you until I got bored, and I haven't been bored for 9 months, so now I'm writing you back. Which, like, ladies, let's take note of that, okay?
There was math to do.
There was truly math to do. While there, she was studying under Philippe Lenard, who was one of the early thinkers in quantum physics, and she worked with him using math, so there was math to do, studying the photoelectric effect. She writes to Einstein then constantly about all of the math equations that they're using to measure how fast molecules are. That's like literally all I can say about it because it's quantum physics and that's kind of as far as I got, but they're doing math with quantum physics.
The limits of our understanding. Mm-hmm. We're a history podcast.
Now, unfortunately, the university in Heidelberg does not allow women to graduate.
So I'm sorry, what?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So she goes back to Zurich and to Einstein, and is telling him all about quantum physics and all the math she's been doing, and they keep studying together. So the question is, of course, how much was she a part of his study and his life and his work? And the answer is a major part.
Yeah, probably a huge ton.
We learn this from letters that were written between the two of them. And here is a select quote. So in September 1900, Albert writes to Mileva, quote, I look forward to resuming our new common work. You must now continue with your research. How proud I will be to have a doctor for my spouse when I'll only be an ordinary man.
Oh, my God. That's so sweet.
Uh-huh.
But who's going to graduate her?
Oh, well, listen. Okay. So by the end of their classes, Mileva and Albert had similar grades. She had a 4.7 and he had a 4.6. So she scored better
similar
than him. But very close, but she was still better. And
above 4.0, the extra 0.1s are just harder and harder. So,
well, except in applied physics, where she got the top mark of 5, but he only got a mark of 1. So, okay. Because she really excelled at experimental work while he did not. Now, unfortunately, at the oral exam, the professor gave 11 out of 12 to the four other male students, but only gave 5 to Mileva. And so only Albert got his degree. Now,
stupid, dumb.
Why this happened?
So gross.
Yeah, like why this happened, there's a lot of speculation. We don't really know. It could be multiple things. She was known to be very shy, so it could be that, like, it's an oral exam. She really just couldn't do that well because she didn't speak very much.
Can I take a guess? I'm going to think it's because she was a woman, and he said, I'm going to save you the trouble of going into math and all the hard things that you're going to have to do in the future.
Well, there are some people who, because Mileva and Albert were already so close and pretty much in a romantic relationship at this point, that there are some people who are like, well, there's already one degree in the family. Guess you don't need two.
Sure, because that's how that works.
Totally, totally how that works. So, yeah, that's what happens. Albert and Mileva continue their work and their romantic relationship, but their families also don't really approve of the match. She was older than him. He didn't have a job. They were kind of forbidden to be together, but they continued to be. They would work together, among other activities. In December 1900, they submitted a first article on capillarity signed only under Albert's name. Nevertheless, both referred to this article in letters as their common article and their common work. Mileva wrote to a friend, quote, we will send a private copy to Boltzmann to see what he thinks, and I hope he will answer us. End quote. So it's very clear that, like, this was their solo piece of work. Why she didn't want her name on it, it could be that she wanted to help him get a job so that they could get married. And if he had a published piece of work, it'd be easier for him to get a job.
Sure.
It could also be that she knew it wouldn't be taken as seriously with a woman's name on it and was
probably
cognizant of that fact. I mean, clearly she's very smart. But they counted themselves as an equal working pair, and nobody really makes this clearer than Albert Einstein himself, that they collaborated on special relativity when he wrote to Mileva, quote, how happy and proud I will be when the two of us together will have brought our work on relative motion to a victorious conclusion. End quote. Maleva continued to try to pass the oral exams, but the professor kept failing her. I'm really not sure why. Again, it goes back to the original question, like, is she just shy? Is it because there's sort of already one degree in the family? Who knows? But she did keep trying to pass. And really, she got a 4.0, which technically is a C and would pass her today. But they still just wouldn't give her a freaking diploma. Because why?
A 4.0 was a C?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... Zurich, I don't know. Venus Venus can explain more.
Six is the highest.
There you go.
Four is like you barely.
Thank you.
Great. Now, Albert, of course, ends up getting a job at the patent office. This is fairly well known. And he started working there in 1902. So technically now they could marry. So Albert and Maleva married in 1903. Albert would work 8 hours a day, 6 days a week at the patent office, while Maleva assumed all of the domestic tasks. But in the evenings, they worked together, sometimes late into the night. Now, 1905 is sort of called Albert's miracle year. He published 5 articles, one on the photoelectric effect, which would eventually lead to his Nobel Prize, 2 on Brownian motion, 1 on special relativity, and of course the famous E equals MC squared. But much later, Albert told R.S. Shanklin that relativity had been his life for 7 years and the photoelectric effect for 5 years. So a.k.a. while Maleva was around and they were working together.
Yep.
And one of his biographers wrote that after having spent 5 weeks to complete the article containing the basis of special relativity, Albert, quote, went to bed for 2 weeks. Maleva checked the article again and again and then mailed it. Now, we're going to just, like, skip forward a ton of years because, A, there's not a lot of information, and, B, it's mostly just depressing. Because Einstein got more and more famous, and she even said to friends, like, I hope that this fame doesn't go to his head. And it did. He started having an affair with his cousin.
With his cousin?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yep. And this caused their marriage to collapse. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
And they divorced with the understanding that if he ever won a Nobel Prize, the money would go to her. And I'm a little bit curious why he agreed to this, except maybe because he knew she did a lot of the work. But we don't know. But that was the agreement. He did, of course, win.
Did
and
the
she...
world know that he'd had an affair with his cousin? Because that could also be the
thing.
They got married.
He and the cousin.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. It's so they knew. The people knew.
I was gonna say maybe she like said I'm gonna tell everyone.
Him?
And you have
oh
to
no
give
no
them money.
No that
blackmail.
Comes later.
That's
that comes
like,
later. Okay, oh. we'll get there.
Okay.
So he does of course win the Nobel Prize, and she used the money to purchase 2 apartment buildings to use as a means of income as a landlord. But it wasn't really an easy life. She never had much money. Albert would, like, occasionally send some alimony, but one of their sons that they had together was schizophrenic. He needed to be institutionalized. That cost a lot of money. And then years later, Albert was heard to have said that the money from the Nobel Prize was his son's inheritance, and when Maleva denied this fact and called him out, saying that she would begin to tell people about her work, a.k.a. blackmail, with, like, not you married your cousin, but, hey, by the way,
that Nobel Prize should have my name on it as well.
Or at least both of ours, you know.
Right.
This is what he wrote back to her. Quote.
God, I'm worried.
You made me laugh when you started threatening me with your recollections.
God.
Have you ever considered, even just for a second, that nobody would ever pay attention if the man you talked about had not accomplished something important? When someone is completely insignificant, there is nothing else to say to this person but to remain modest and silent. This is what I advise you to do. So everybody, fuck Albert Einstein. Right? Wow.
You just want to like reach through history and slap the shit out
of him. Yeah. Basically, yes. So she remained silent, and there is little known or written about her. There's a few biographies. The National Geographic show Genius that had a season on Albert Einstein does feature her. Somebody was mentioning, I think it was you actually, that she had just been featured on another podcast that someone was listening to. So I think she's kind of starting to have a little bit of a renaissance.
I think it was an episode of Radiolab.
Oh, I love Radiolab. Yeah. So I think she's starting to have sort of a renaissance and a recognition of her contributions and who she was and all these things. But this is what I'm talking about when it's like, when I started reading this, I was like, this is why we have this podcast. Mm. Like, this woman contributed so much, and because of one man, got completely shut down. So I will leave you with this. If there's any doubt in your mind about whether or not she should be recognized as the incredible scientist, mathematician, physicist, everything, this is what Albert was reported to have once said. Quote, "I need my wife. She solves for me all my mathematical problems." End quote.
Son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. That is, I mean, astonishing.
Right?
That one, that we've never, I mean, we say this all the time, like how we've never heard of her. But also, Albert Einstein is arguably not just one of the most famous scientists in the world, but one of the most famous people.
Wasn't he named Man of the Century?
I think so, which is...
Right? And now I'm like, I don't know. Like, I always wanted that photo of, or poster of Albert Einstein, like him sticking out his tongue, or he has like great quotes about like, you know, don't judge a fish by its ability to ride a bicycle, and imagination's more important than knowledge. And now I'm like, I don't want anything to do with this gross white man.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, well. Thank you for illuminating us with the story of Mileva. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about Queen Amina of Zarya. I should start off by saying one.
Where Zarya is.
Yes, Zarya is an ancient name for a region of the country that is now Nigeria.
Ooh.
So it's Africa. She's an African queen.
Yes.
I should start off by saying, if you were to Google Queen Amina of Zarya, there is actually a lot of conversation about how she actually never existed. But we have actually a lot of... That conversation is because we have so little evidence of her existence that survives to this day. That said, those things that do exist are physical structures that I'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay.
So I just want to say she does exist. And also that this is going to be, it's very short. I was saying before, I was talking to someone before the podcast, I found seven sources, including the BBC, a Medium piece, a couple of other like more obscure titles, mm-hmm. And barely 2 pages of information on her. That's how hard it was to research her. But what I found, okay.
Oh, man.
Born sometime in the mid-16th century, her parents were King Niketau and Queen Bakwa Toronku of Zazau, which is what Zarya is now called in Nigeria.
Okay.
She was the oldest child of either 3 or 4. We're not entirely sure. And when she was born, her grandfather actually was still the king. And he's said to have favored her, carrying her, actually physically carrying her around the court.
Do you see what we mean by the dads and the granddads?
Literally.
Great.
Not only carrying her on court, but also helping to instruct her in politics and military tactics and matters, brought her to meetings where these sensitive government things were being discussed.
Dang.
We don't know much more than that about her childhood and upbringing, other than the fact that she was educated and she was allowed to train with the military.
Yes.
Which gives you kind of an insight into where we're going. So her grandfather passes away in 1549. Her brother is named heir to the throne, and she's named heir apparent after him. So her father becomes king, and then she's second in line. During this time, she's given formal responsibilities in the government. This
Ooh.
Is the mid-1500s. She meets daily with advisors. She discusses the affairs of the city and actually becomes part of the imperial court. She becomes part of the actual running of the city. She also continues to train with the military, specializing in the cavalry. And she proves herself a smart tactician, mastering a number of different weapons. When her parents die in 1566, now note, we're not exactly sure who dies in 1566. It could have been just her mom. It could have been both her mom and her dad. There's some sources that say that her dad passed away and then her mom assumed as queen regent until her brother was able. So something happens and her brother assumes the throne, essentially. Her younger brother, Karama, who immediately takes the country into a war to expand territory and influence.
Typical men.
I would only say, just wait a second before you say that. He rules for 10 years. They're at almost constant warfare during this time. And he dies 1576. Amina becomes queen. And within 3 months of taking the throne, she begins what would become a 34-year conquest of her neighboring territories. Yeah.
Typical queens.
So within the time, we don't exactly know, again, the actual size. We do know that the landmass, the actual physical landmass of the city tripled in this 34-year period. It grows to the point where it actually touches the Atlantic Ocean at one point.
Whoa.
And the whole point of this was, at this point, Africa is broken up into a bunch of tribal states. They're all city states. And so her purpose at this point, there's 7 Hausa states, and she's going and conquering the other city states, not only to control the means of trade, to control the actual trade routes, but also to acquire their, she introduces the kola nut, which is a very versatile crop. It's not only used for food, but the other parts of the plants can be used for various other clothing and armor and all that kind of fun stuff. Her people are known to be metal workers, and so she introduces metal armor during this time to her army.
All right.
Not only helmets, but also body armor as well. And every time she conquers a city, she builds these huge walls around it. And these are one of the things that still exists to this day.
Okay.
And actually, one of the we know them today as the Ganuwar Amina, which translates to Amina's Walls, which is one of the evidences that we have that proves she actually existed.
Stop trying to erase women from history.
She increases the nation's wealth with the spoils of war, gold, taxes, slaves, new crops. She establishes new trade routes. She builds walls around the city. These walls also serve as a symbol of prestige. So when they weren't at war, you know, you come to a city with walls. Walls mean you have the money to build those walls, especially during the mid-1500s. I mean, you laugh, but it's true.
I'm just thinking about other walls. It's fine.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Gross. Okay,
moving on.
When I feel like I said to you at some point over the last couple months that we've been talking about these ladies, this one part I keep saying, like, oh my God, I need to tell you. And you're like, no, save it for the live.
Oh my God. Okay, tell me.
Okay, so the legend has it that after every battle, she would take a husband from among the conquered armies. She would spend the night with him and then have him killed in the morning.
Oh! Oh my God!
She was worried that rumors and stories of her sexual exploits would hurt her hold on power because she was a woman. So she made sure that no man could ever speak of what it was like to lie with her.
There is like, a lot that the women in this audience can take home tonight. If a man texts you and is like, just let me know when you're free, you can literally wait months until when you're bored and reach back out. And also...
And then murder him in the morning?
Listen, I'm just saying, queen's got to do what a queen's got to do.
Yeah, so she... beyond this, she never married. Nor had any children that we've recorded. No children that we've recorded. Most of her life, like most of her life, her death is shrouded in mystery. We actually don't know. This is literally all I could find on Queen Amina. Many stories, of course, in the intervening years have popped up to try and fill in the gaps. The most egregious of which has her drowning while chasing after a man who had escaped, like one of these husbands. And I'm like, she's literally a queen. She has 20,000 soldiers at her disposal. She's not chasing anyone, let alone a man that she imprisoned for one night as a sex slave. Like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
I prefer to believe the stories that say she died in battle, because that seems more fitting to a warrior queen.
Mm-hmm.
These days, she's regarded in Nigeria as, quote, Queen Amina, a woman as capable as any man. She's regarded as a legend for conquering men and forcing them to pay her tribute as few men had done before, or honestly, since.
Mm-hmm.
There is a statue of her at the National Arts Theater in Nigeria. It's the only public, like, there's a bunch of schools named after her, but in terms of public displays, mm-hmm. that's the only one I could find. And many accounts say that she was the inspiration behind Xena, Warrior Princess.
What?
And that is Queen Amina of Zaria.
Wow.
All I could find. Like, the definition of a badass.
I feel like she's also the inspiration for Black Widow, because she's killing all the men that she's sleeping with. I'm just saying.
The definition of a Black Widow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
I was worried, just in a lot in the same vein, I was worried that I wouldn't have enough to fill a full story with
her. But there's
her.
So much.
But I mean, that's just like, that alone, that she would take someone and then kill them in the morning is... It's just enough.
I don't want to say it's my dream, because that's very dark, but it's pretty badass. Yeah. And I've got to give it a lot of respect.
Absolutely. So shall we invite our guests on stage?
Yes, please.
Our guests today are the creators of the Emmy-nominated short-form series Control-Alt-Delete. It is an abortion comedy. And I should say, Roni, it's Roni, Geva, and Margaret Catch. And I should say, Roni is the second person to ever come on The Bitchery of History twice.
Who's the first?
Wait, she's the only person to ever come on The Bitchery of History twice.
Hey!
Heyo! So welcome, Roni and Margaret.
I'm a big old fan.
Oh my god, hello, welcome.
Thanks, we're so happy to be here.
Welcome. I binged Control-Alt-Delete. Over the last, I mean, it's an hour, really.
In the last intermission.
During the intermission, I binged it all. And I have to say, first of all, congratulations. It is awesome.
Thank you.
It's such a great piece. And also congratulations on having a nomination. You have two nominations.
Yes.
Fantastic. For what, if you'd like to share?
Both for Best Actor in a Short Form. So Naomi Grossman for season one and Ed Begley Jr. for season two.
Awesome. Fantastic. And then for the audience, for those listening, can you explain what Control-Alt-Delete is? Because you could probably do it better than I ever
could. Yeah. It's a workplace comedy that happens to be set in an abortion clinic that's inspired by real stories from women in clinics all over the country.
Fantastic. So real stories, it's fictionalized, right?
It is fictionalized.
So we really wanted to make sure in this particular kind of comedy to base it completely in truth, because we don't want to give the antis any more fodder. And so we...
But we definitely took story liberties.
Absolutely.
With it.
But it's all based in mega truth and lots of research, because we're super nerds, and also because we have had the opportunity to interview providers and people who work in clinics all over the country and have gotten such incredible stories from them. And then, you know, from a nugget of a story, we could, extrapolate and make belief, but it's all based in truth. And we've had people who work at clinics reach out and say, oh my God, that line about, the gender pronouns workshop is like hilarious, because we literally just had one. I'm like, good.
Or we've had people just like very simple things too, be like, we're so glad you talk about the sliding scale. And I'm like, really? That's a thing? Okay, cool, great. Yeah. Yay.
Oh,
sliding
and
scales.
It lends to accessibility.
Yeah.
And one person said to us, is your Dr. R based on our Dr. R?
Oh,
which is amazing. kidding.
That
but
is
no,
amazing.
It was not. It's not.
Can I also just say for the record that Allison Powell was one of the mega amazing producers on season two, and we could not have done it without her. So, like,
literally could not have done it without her. We were like, Allison, what if we get a robot? And it has to be made by a woman because everything in this project is going to be, you know, it's an all-female crew. So can you magically make that happen? And Allison was like, Yes, I can.
Robot made by a woman. Well, it was headed by a woman, but it was made by a school robotics department.
Yes.
Fantastic. But woman was in charge. It also had to roll and open a pizza box.
And be in our budget, which was very difficult. Mm.
So Allison, goddess.
Made it happen.
100%. So I guess, Todd, you already kind of alluded to this a little bit, but what have been some of the challenges on having a project like this that is, I mean, so inherently, like it or not, kind of volatile?
I mean, not as many as you might think. I mean, I think the major challenges we've had are challenges that anyone making an independent film or TV project would have. Getting enough money is like the number one thing, actually getting people to help and getting it off the ground. I think those are more challenging than the few people who have wished us ill in dramatic fashion.
I think we were both really girding our loins for, you know, an onslaught of hate, and it didn't come. I mean, absolutely.
There are haters,
and they leave angry comments, and sometimes we have to block people. But truly, it was not as bad as we thought.
Yeah, there have been way more people who have been excited and happy about what we're doing, and that was such a wonderful surprise.
Yeah, to just have people be like, I didn't know that this was the show that I needed in my life.
And our parents were worried. Our parents were legit worried. Well, because when your child makes something with that could potentially lead to people being super angry about it, there's some worry there.
Sure.
And I definitely think that we were concerned enough to like put an address, to get like a P.O. box for our address for everything that goes through Control-Alt-Delete. But yeah, we've been really surprised at the lack of terrifying things that have happened
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So the last time when I had Roni on, or when I should say we, because it was a conversation with Allison, you talked about, conversely, that you were worried about some of the reaction, but also you'd had people reach out who actually wanted to start that conversation, that you weren't, they had the opposite point of view, but you were still able to engage. Have you found that to still be happening? Has it increased as you've had more visibility?
We try and facilitate that to be a conversation amongst the people on our social media pages, and we try and stay out of it. Okay. So once in a while, we'll enlist a friend or spouse I'll be like, could you just like respond to this person right here? Because we're trying to stay out of the actual dialogue.
Sure. But what ends up happening, which is really fascinating, is that, you know, some of our posts will have just hundreds of comments of people going back and forth. And sometimes it's like really disrespectful, like, well, your mom should have aborted you. But sometimes it's very thoughtful and people will be like, well, I just don't agree with your point of view and here is why. And that's exactly why we made this.
And I will say that it makes me a little sad, but I'm not too surprised that most of the really angry, hateful people are men and most of the people who are conversing are women.
Huge shocker.
I know. Wow, you guys. The women are basket weaving and the men are throwing spears. It's so weird.
Yeah. So I guess going a little bigger picture, I'm wondering not only what inspired Control-Alt-Delete, but also what inspires you? Who inspires you? Every time we've had someone on, a guest on the podcast, we ask them kind of what got them to the point they're at now and who's inspired them to get there. So
we were talking about this earlier and we were both like, our moms!
Aww. Aww.
We're so cheesy, but honestly, I grew up with an incredibly strong, badass, fierce mom who is so smart and just doesn't take anything from anyone and is so outspoken in the way that, like, when I was little, I'd come home and I'd say, well, teacher said this. And my mom, literally, I was six, was like, Yes, but is teacher God? I don't think so. What do you think? So from the age of six, she was like, be insubordinate, go. and thank God, because then as an artist, it allows me to think, okay, I am so lucky to have this voice and have a partner that I can work with who is going to talk about her mom in a second. And let's change the world through art, because I am so lucky to have a mom who has taught me because you can. Mm. So she's my inspiration.
She's a special lady.
She is. I love her.
And so my mom, both my parents are teachers. Well, they were. They're retired-ish. And my mother would get up every morning at 5 a.m. to write. And that never struck me as odd. Like, I never, it was just what she did. I didn't even think about it until about a year ago when I realized that she worked very full-time, was raising two kids, and would wake up at 5 in the morning and go out to our little woodshed in the middle of Connecticut in the winter and have a little kerosene lamp that she turned on and would write at 5 a.m. in the cold every single day.
That's amazing.
So that, it just struck me that I had an incredible role model, someone who worked really, really hard to pursue her passion and never let anything deter her from that.
That's fantastic. I guess I should take this moment to say my mom's right there. She flew here from, she woke me up on my birthday and said, do you want to get me a ticket to your show? And I said, do you have a ticket to Los Angeles? And she said, yeah, I just got it.
Yay. Moms are the best.
Moms are the best.
So what's next?
We're writing a lot of things.
We are writing a lot of things. Yeah. So we have, one of the things that we always talk about is that we love the idea of talking about things that maybe people don't love to talk about or that have sort of like a backpack of shame around them. And using comedy to put a light on those topics and hopefully illuminating a conversation amongst people. So we have all kinds of things that we are exploring and ideas and topics. So we are writing. It is
so
writing
much.
Time.
It is writing at 5 a.m., right, every morning?
No. No, no, no.
Not many woodsheds.
No woodsheds.
No, it's mostly my living room or her living room. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, we just, and it's funny because we were at a retreat in Colorado with a bunch of friends of ours. And we kept being like, okay, so next week when we're back and we're like looking through our Google calendars, like to confer our schedules. And one of our friends was like, oh my God, you guys with your calendars. And we were like, yeah, but that's how we get so much done.
Right.
Right? It's like we have to schedule it. It doesn't just come from the sky. Like I always thought when I was little that, you know, if I wanted to write something, inspiration will fall out of the sky into my brain and out of my hands, it will pour. And that is not true. What's more true is that you have a disciplined practice with someone who holds you accountable.
Thank goodness we have each other. Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh. Thank God.
Yeah.
For real, real.
And then we hold each other accountable. And sure, we get together and the first 15 to 45 minutes are like, let's nosh
and talk
about our feelings and what's going on right now. But then we really, you know, hunker down and get work done every day almost.
Yeah. Almost every day, yeah.
I think I see you more than I see almost anyone else in my life.
I see you more than I see anyone else in my life. Yeah.
Good thing we like each other.
I know.
I feel like that's the same with me and Allison, except for the people that I work. I probably see you more than anyone else other than the people I work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's the best.
It is. It's great.
Yeah. I see her more than I see my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Oh.
Except
we love you, Joe.
I mean, because I don't count sleeping, so.
Fair. So my favorite question that we ask all guests that come onto the podcast is, what advice would you offer the world?
The whole world?
Or just what advice would you have, like, if someone came up to you and you had one piece of advice to give them, what would it be?
And this is a person asking for, like, love advice or advice on how to be a better person or, like, how to
pursue
a creative
career.
Any advice
ever. Any advice
just
ever.
What's your advice?
Oh,
like,
God,
your
I
life
do best
advice.
With boundaries.
she does. It's real.
Well, Romy can go first.
I'll go first.
Okay.
And I'll give you time to churn.
Thank you.
There is a African proverb, and I'm going to butcher it, and I am so sorry, but it's something like, anyone who thinks that something small can't make a difference has never spent a night in a tent with a mosquito.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Like, that is my truth. right? It's the whole, like, be the change you want to see in the world. Oh, I am a mosquito. I am stinging. But truly, it's the idea, you know, so many people will be like, ugh, Roni, who cares if you don't shop at name a store that's doing something heinous in society right now? Mm. Or who cares if you don't eat at name a restaurant that does something terrible to its employees? And I say, I care, because my one voice matters. And I think that there's a teenager right now who is showing the world how much a little person's loud voice can matter. Ooh. And so to me, that has, from the day my mom told me that teacher isn't God, it was like, oh, right, my voice is important. I'm going to take up space as much as I can and make a difference if I can. So that would be my advice.
Be the mosquito.
Be the mosquito.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean,
she's all right.
Yeah, I think I would definitely tag on to that one. The other thing that occurred to me was a quote by the, I believe, Roman actor Terrence that really stuck with me since college, which is, nothing human is alien to me. And so while you're being that mosquito, to remember that everyone feels the same things. We are all cut from the same cloth of person. And to add that into the mix, I would just like sprinkle some of that on everything.
Oh my God, this is basically like our whole writing partnership. God. Like, is in like inspirational quotes.
Oh Lord. Love it. I love it. So good.
So if people would like to find your work now and in the future, where can they do so?
Oh man, so we don't have it all in one place, which we totally should.
Totally work on that. Let's figure that out.
Okay, we have calendars. Get our calendars.
We're going to get out. So hold on a second, you guys. We just got to make sure, like, what's happening on Monday. Between 10 and 12.
You're leaving town.
I'm so sorry. And she knows my schedule. Isn't this amazing, you guys? And I'm like, this is when you have acupuncture, okay? Don't forget.
It's true.
they can go to facebook.com/control-alt-delete-show.
But really, if you want to see all of Control Alt Delete, it's way better to go to vimeo.com/channel/control-alt-delete-show. And BT Dubs, this is spelled, it's CTRLALTDELETE. The delete is spelled out. We were so dumb when we thought of the name. We didn't think of that there are actually a million different ways one could potentially spell it.
We were just being cheeky about a title. But that's where you can find all of our stuff. We also are on.
It is a great title, by the way.
Thanks. That was Roni. Thanks. We usually don't really remember who thinks of what, but I remember when you thought that up.
I was like, Margaret, I got it. Yeah. Like a dummy.
No, you did, though.
Oh, thanks. But yeah, that's where you can find us. And we are also on Instagram. Same deal, Control-Alt-Delete-Show.
And all of these links will be in the info on the podcast.
Oh,
yes, absolutely.
My favorite podcast.
So,
but really, I'm just going to gush for a second. You guys, hey, audience.
All right, new word.
All right,
new word. We're just going to add that to Webster. Hey, audience, your friend Roni listens to like two podcasts. One is My Dad Wrote a Porno, and one is The Bitchery of History. Honestly, it's the best. It's the best. I'm fangirling so hard, but it's the best.
Well, as I weep.
Because you get to learn about all these women, like Maleva. Like, who is not going to leave here tonight? And then you see something about Albert Einstein, and you'd be like, well, Let me just tell you something right now.
I mean, you know what? I'm going to go home and be like, hi, physicist partner of mine. Let's dish some tea about Albert Einstein.
You have to tell me what Rick says if he knows about her. But knowing Rick, he'll be like, yes, I have her three biographies on our bookshelf. You've just never read them.
You do have an astounding number of books. I'd be surprised
if we didn't have something about her, probably. I mean, knowing him, he's a physics aficionado, it'll be there.
Awesome. I hope you'll join us. We end every single podcast saying bitches get stuff done.
Amazing. I thought you were gonna ask us to sing a song and I was gonna be really upset about it.
That's after at the bar.
No problem, we can do that.
If you'd like to find us, you can find us.
We are on Facebook, just search The Bitchery of History.
We're on Instagram, just search
The Bitchery of History.
We're on Twitter.
Search The Bitchery of History.
What's the other one?
We have a new website.
Oh, we do.
I mean, it's not new merch? Anymore. Do we?
I want a t-shirt.
We gotta get merch.
Stickers. There's bitches get stuff done stickers out on the thing. Those are free. So get one as you go out.
Okay.
But then we also do have sticker. The little baby frames that are here, these were made by Sydney Tannenbaum, and some of them are stickers, and they're available for purchase on our website.
Ooh.
Great. She's going to love me for having plugged that.
Yes. And can't you get like a pack of three? I mean, the holidays are coming up. So, get a little stocking stuffer.
I think if you get three, you get free shipping.
Mm. Yeah. OMG, so, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about the deals.
So that website, though, is thebitcheryofhistory.com. Yes.
I mean, at this point, you can just Google the Bitchery of History. It's also fine.
We're search engine optimized. thank you so much to the best team, the best podcasting team in the business. Thank you so much to Jeanette.
Sydney.
And Jess.
And also shout out to Venus for running our sound, for both our live shows.
And today we're thanking Anna and Sean, who helped us to set up and break down.
Jesse up in the booth.
Liz and Riley, the creators of It's Personal, who are two of the most amazing people you will ever meet. And as always, remember,
bitches get stuff done.
That's it. That's the show. Thank you so much,
everybody. I'll ask him. He might know.